What is up, guys? Episode 2 via the source. I'm Steven Masso. The day today is March 12th. It's a Monday. And for people living in Texas, it is also spring break. South Texas, specifically down here, we have South Padre Island. That's actually like a 40-minute drive or so from where I reside. And it's actually one of the hottest spots for spring break in the whole country. Hundreds, thousands actually pack into this small little island we have, and it just gets really crazy. Really, really, really crazy, actually. But I won't be partaking in that because I'm going to be busy working and I'm going to be doing this podcast. So, first things first, guys, I must admit to you, this never happens to me, but it happened to me today. I fell for fake news. Yep. On Twitter, I was scrolling through, and I was just running by it really quick, and I saw a tweet, Patrick Peterson to the Browns, traded for the 4th overall pick, and I was like, what? This can't be happening. But with everything that's been happening with the Browns, I believed it, and I retweeted it, and for my followers, I apologize. I am so sorry. That will never happen again. I take pride in being a reputable source, and it pains me so much to say that that happened. So, guys, that won't be happening again. All right, so the news. I'm still not sure how often I'm going to do the podcast. I don't know if it's going to be a daily thing or a twice a week thing. I'm still not sure. So the news that I didn't get to cover, Richard Sherman signed a contract with the San Francisco 49ers. Kind of crazy. It's crazy because the contract. Sherman actually negotiated this deal himself without an agent. So this led to some things. People are saying that this kind of was a substandard contract by Sherman. And if you look at it, it kind of is. It's kind of what people call a prove it contract. Vontae Davis signed a similar one. It's usually for guys coming off an injury. And people want to say, you know, they want to see if you can still play at a high level. So they give you this 1-year contract with a bunch of incentives that you have to hit in order to prove that you're worth that kind of money. And then if you don't hit those incentives, you don't get the full contract. And it's weird because Sherman, you know, he's Richard Sherman. He's been an all-pro 3 times. He shouldn't be signing these prove-it contracts, but he negotiated it himself. And I don't like, you know, talking about other people's money too much, but it, you know, it kind of seems like a weird contract for him to be signing. But the cool thing about him not having an agent, which I don't see a lot of people talking about, is you don't get that cut. An agent takes, I believe, around 3%. I think Omar Kelly from the Sun Sentinel said that agents take around 3%, maybe 5% of the contract. So you're removing that entirely. But if you look at the contract, I think they said it was a 3-year, $27 million contract with incentives. And the incentives are that Sherman has to make the Pro Bowl, which is entirely possible. He could, but then again, this is a guy coming off an Achilles injury, which is a, you know, completely devastating injury. And especially for a cornerback, a guy who's going to have to be using his footwork so precisely, that's a very hard injury to come back, make the Pro Bowl. And then if he wants another bonus, he's going to have to make the All-Pro, which honestly, at this point in his career and with the cast around him in San Francisco, I don't see that happening. And when I talk about the cast around you, I'm going to dive into this a little bit. I think the surrounding cast for a defensive back is so, so important. And if all you have to do to see this is look at Josh Norman when he was with Carolina. That guy was an all-pro cornerback. But if you look at people we had around him, Kurt Coleman, he wasn't the best, but he played his role pretty well. They had Luke Kuechly. They had all these studs on the defensive line like Kawan Short and Johnson, I forget his first name, I'll get it right now. And they had all these studs, you know, on the defense. And then when you put him in a different environment, yeah, he still may be as talented, but it's not going to flow the exact same ways. He's going to have more responsibilities. Other people are going to put him in positions where it's more vulnerable. So I could really see that happening to Sherman as well, because he's leaving Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, you know, a lot of the time in his prime, he had Byron Maxwell. So it's going to be a difficult thing for him to do. He's going to be kind of like the lone guy out there. So Sherman, I don't see him hitting those incentives. I think this contract was unnecessary. I think it's a, you know, it's a cool idea, you know, removing the agent and betting on yourself. But at this point in his career, I don't see that as a, you know, necessary thing to do. But for the San Francisco 49ers, that's a great deal. You know, all props to them. And I think the 49ers, they're going to be a pretty solid team. I don't think they're going to be a big Super Bowl threat by any means, because I think Garoppolo is kind of overhyped. I don't mean that in the sense that he's overpaid, because I just think that's how the market is with the quarterbacks nowadays. So given that, I think they kind of had to pay him, because who else are you going to get? Yeah, I mean, having cap space is nice, but having championships is more nice. Like they always say in baseball, you know, parades over prospects. And I think championships over cap space too. So I think that was a good move picking up Garoppolo. And I think they could be a very solid team. I don't think they're just there yet. They definitely, definitely need some receivers. If they can get Allen Robinson, who I talked about, that would be great. I think Taylor Gabriel can also fit really well. So that could be a pretty good solid team in maybe like two years or so. Okay, so the next news, Lawrence Timmons of the Miami Dolphins. Everybody who followed the team knew this was going to happen, but Lawrence Timmons got cut. He went AWOL during the season. That had nothing to do with it. He just looked really old when he was on the field, so he's gone. That's going to clear up some cap space, but this is only just the tip of the iceberg, because now they're saying that Ndamukong Suh could possibly get released, and that's going to free up a pretty good amount of cap space, but that just shows that Miami is in no shape or form to compete at all for the playoffs this season. And it's a shame, because if you look around the division, Brady's getting older. Yeah, they still went to the Super Bowl, but he's getting older, so that's, you know, a sign of hope. You look at the Bills are moving up. They just traded their offensive lineman, Cordy Glenn, to the Cincinnati Bengals so that they can move up in the draft. So they don't have a quarterback. The Jets don't have a quarterback, so this would have been a really good time for things to connect for Miami and to make that push with Tannehill, but it doesn't seem like that's happening. If anything, as of right now, they look like they may be one of the worst teams in the league. They're losing Ndamukong Suh, potentially. Now there's talks about them actually going to move on from Tannehill, which would be just completely horrible. Matt Moore, the backup quarterback, is actually talking to the Buffalo Bills, and I don't see him anywhere near being a starter for the Buffalo Bills, but he's a solid backup. He's a bit of a gunslinger. He doesn't really make reads well, but he can throw the ball around, that's for sure. He has the arm strength to do it, but he doesn't make enough reads to be a starter, so that's a quality backup at best. But it's really a shame that Miami is doing this rebuild now, because it seemed like, you know, two seasons ago that they actually had some potential there. Another thing, I see a lot of people have been talking about Deion Lewis. And I think Deion Lewis is a great running back, but he's coming off a great season, so that doesn't really catch my interest that much, because you're going to have to pay so much for a running back. And I'm not a big fan of the running back position in 2018. And I actually did a fan post on the Finsider talking about this, so I'm going to read it for the podcast. And here it goes. In 2016, Rams running back Todd Gurley rushed for a total of 885 yards and averaged 3.2 yards a carry, which shocked many fans who were expecting a season much more like his rookie year. In 2017, Gurley bounced back with 2,093 yards from scrimmage, 1,300 yards rushing, and 4.8 yards per carry with 13 touchdowns, and it put him at the forefront of the MVP conversation. The 2017 season proved to everyone that Gurley was in fact the freaky talented star that his rookie season had us ready to believe. But to me, it only further proved that the running back position is complicated. It's a position that is so highly dependent on a series of other factors that it becomes hard to gauge who are the most efficient at their job. Another example would be in Green Bay. In 2016, the Packers lost so much of their running back depth to injury that they turned to wide receiver Ty Montgomery, and he actually did a very good job filling in. He did well enough that he retained the starting role in 2017 until getting injured. Rookie running back Aaron Jones then stepped up and looked terrific, putting up 346 yards and 3 touchdowns in 4 games. But then again, you guessed it, he went down and running back Jamal Williams stepped up. And Williams also did a serviceable job. So you're probably thinking, okay, but what does this all mean? Well, what I'm saying is, if one of the premier running backs in the league, like Gurley, can be completely shut down for an entire season, and if a squad of running backs with relatively low expectations can become a thriving rushing corp, then why should a team throw a running back a big contract? Well, it's in my belief that maybe they shouldn't, with an exception to a select few elite-level players, and I don't think Deion Lewis is quite there yet. Lewis is coming off an amazing season with New England, gaining 1,110 yards from scrimmage in 2017, and that has many Dolphins fans calling for the team to take a look at him. It's rumored right now that his asking price will be in the same range as Latavius Murray, which was a 3-year, $15 million deal with some incentives. Though I think there is a team out there that will probably offer him more. So it must be said that I'm a huge fan of Deion Lewis. He's one of the shiftiest backs in the entire league, and I really do mean that. He's extremely talented as a pass catcher and has an incredible ability to run between the tackles, which for a guy his frame is extremely impressive. However, Deion Lewis will be sneaking into his 8th year as a pro, and he will be turning 28. So by no means is that too old for this league, but the explosiveness between a player in their early 20s and their late 20s becomes very noticeable, especially when the wear and tear begins to take a larger role. So it's also important to note, the New England Patriots have a tremendous rushing system, and this system has been benefiting running backs for years, much like how Andy Reid does with his running backs. Just look at Jamal Charles, Charcandrick West, Spencer Ware, and now Kareem Hunt. All of them do really well. And if you take a player out of this system and expect them to mirror their earlier stats, that's just highly unrealistic. Stephon Ridley had a short-lived career, but it was solid with the Patriots, but he became obsolete after he left. The same thing can be said about Shane Vereen. LeGarrette Blount has still shown promise in Philadelphia, but it's really not even comparable to his times in New England. So how can the Dolphins, a team with so many needs at the offensive line and now receiver, afford to spend so much on a running back who will be given so little to work with? Talking about the offensive line. Not to mention when there's a viable young running back in Kenyon Drake already on the roster. At the end of the day, these players are all professional athletes. They're cream of the crop. Every single running back in this league showed potential in college that warranted them being brought into this highly, highly exclusive league. So if you give them a gap, they will hit it. Some may not be as good at finding holes, Trent Richardson, but it won't matter if a team has the best running back in the league if they are getting hit behind the line by defenders every single time they touch the ball, just like Gurley did that 1 year. So give your running back an offensive line, let them make a hole, and balance the offense to prevent them from loading the box, and then you will have your star running back. So basically, in that post, what I'm talking about is you can't spend on a running back if you don't have an offensive line, if you don't have a balanced rushing game, because then they're going to scheme entirely for that running back and you wasted money, because a running back can only do so much. If there's no gaps there, he can't do anything. If they're loading the box because they know you're not going to pass it deep, he's not going to get anything. There's only so much a running back could do. And that's when I see these hard contracts that guys like Le'Veon Bell, he wants this huge contract. But the teams that have the cap space to give him that huge contract, they have so many holes at other places that they can't really afford to give it to him. And then again, I'm not even sure if you want a running back in this time, because they go down so often with injuries, and they're so limited by that and so replaceable because there's so much talent that all you have to do is give them a hole. Like, for instance, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, DeMarco Murray had a tremendous year with the Dallas Cowboys, but then they released him, and Darren McFadden still had that offensive line, and he was able to produce so much. That's why I was kind of shocked when they took Ezekiel Elliott over Jalen Ramsey, because I saw Darren McFadden, he was extremely productive. I mean, sure, not as much as Zeke, but he was still enough to get the job done, and they took a running back, which kind of shocked me. So I do think the running back position in 2018 is kind of a difficult one to gauge and to measure. So I want everyone to think about that going forward. That'll be the final part of the podcast. I hope everyone liked it. Subscribe if you did. Follow me on Twitter. Again, my name is Shady Steven on Twitter, Instagram, everything. Like it and subscribe. And guys, I'll catch you next time. This is Via the Source, and I'm Steven Masso.